Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by 1-800-FREE-LOCKTY. Call now, make your donation. I was just listening to the press conference, and wow. What a mess. This is what I was able to get out of it so far. I mean, he's not done yet. He's still up there talking as we speak. Fortunately, there's an English translator because obviously the press conference is in Portuguese. Now, I always laugh every time I hear Portuguese spoken. You're like, why? Now, you hear the last name Jones, and of course, you say to yourself, okay, what is he, English, Welsh? Right? Yeah, that's Welsh, all right? And then I'm also part Irish. But I'm half Portuguese. My grandparents, my mother's maiden name is Ferreira. And my mother's parents actually came over from São Miguel in the Azores. So my mother was the first generation born in this country. And when I was a kid, this is why I laugh, my grandparents were wonderful people, loving, giving, generous. I mean, loved Nana, loved Grampy, right? But if they ever got into an argument, they would argue in Portuguese. That's why I laugh every time I hear it, because I'm like, I don't really have any idea what you're saying, but. So I'm listening to this press conference, and this is what they're saying happened. Evidently, somewhere along the line here, which I believe, Sean, you brought up yesterday, there are at least a couple of women involved in this, and that's part of the hiding in this. Now, the guys evidently get out of the cab, and they've been drinking and whatever. I mean, they all admit they're intoxicated, right? And so they go to the bathroom. They want to go to the bathroom. Now, A, they're riding in a cab, so that's a good thing. B, they want to go to a bathroom, at least use a regular bathroom. Well, that's a good thing. But evidently, the door's not open, so they, I don't know, they kick it in, but they also broke some mirrors in there as well. And the cab driver, by the way, has been interviewed, is still being interviewed right now, and is confirming all of this to them as we speak. And evidently the security guard comes over. He's armed, but that's okay. I mean, you know, but he says he did not pull his gun, and there is video, I guess, somewhere in here. And these guys do pay, evidently pay restitution. Now, it's not a lot of money in American dollars, but they did pay restitution. I guess they called the manager over. Well, not called the manager. They got a hold of the manager of the gas station where the door's broken and mirrors are busted inside. I don't think it was windows, it was mirrors, I believe. And so finally, after some back and forth, they then pay money for all of this. The swimmers offered 100 Brazilian reals, which is $31 in American money, and then an additional $20 to compensate for the damage. Now, none of this comes to fruition if it doesn't make it to social media. That's how they found out. The swimmers did not file a police report that they were robbed. They did not. So the issue of filing a false police report, at least in terms of formally filing a false police report, is off the table because they didn't file one. But because of social media and, of course, the high profile of Ryan Lochte, they said, we need to investigate this. Well, they're investigating, and they find out it's completely bogus. So now the two of the swimmers are still being interviewed in the station now. And he doesn't know what charges they can be hit with right now because he said the investigation's not over yet. Now, let's see. Can you... now, again, I don't know Brazilian law. I barely know American law. But can they get them for making false statements to the police? Of course they can. But they did not file a false police report because they didn't file a police report. They didn't report it to the police. The police only investigated it because it was seen on social media. And then, of course, Ryan Lochte's mom talked to the press. So they're not sure yet what they're, you know, what to do here. Now, as for guns being drawn, okay, this is where evidently one of the security guards lied. Because you've been reading the stories that, nope, no guns were drawn. That's not what the video shows. Two of the security guards pointed their guns at Lochte and the three swimmers during the gas station dispute. So they actually did point their guns at them. So yes, there was at gunpoint, but it wasn't a robbery at gunpoint. But they had guns drawn against them. So they said the swimmers broke the bathroom door. They broke the soap dispenser. And eventually, and essentially, they vandalized the bathroom. Workers at the gas station went to see what the commotion was about. At that point, a security guard also came and confronted the swimmers and pointed a gun. A second guard came from behind and pointed another gun. Now, remember, everyone had said there had been no gun. No gun. You know, this whole thing changes all the time. I said yesterday, I said, we'll find that a gun was drawn in this somewhere. Because, again, you just don't, there's no trust anymore in what's going on. All right, now let's continue with what the police official said. They said Lochte fabricated the report, and so this is, I mean, that's how it played out. Now, after the guns are drawn and the whole thing, that's where the money changed hands. That's why when you see the swimmers going through the Olympic Village security, the giveaway is they still have their wallets. Well, there's a reason they have their wallets. Yeah, they don't have the money in the wallets because they pay restitution for the damage that they caused in the incident that they caused. But because it's not a robbery, they paid restitution. They handed over the money and kept their wallets for obvious reasons. It wasn't a robbery. And that was one of the big tip-offs here, is that when they go through the Olympic Village security, which of course is on video, that's one of the keys right there of the whole story. Because you see them go through with their wallets, their phones, and so forth, and they obviously had nothing taken except for the cash. Now, the part about gunpoint, while not being police but being security officials, evidently is true. But the reason they drew the guns is because they're security people, they're working in the area, and it's their job to come over and protect the gas station. So, they did have guns drawn on them, but they weren't from robbers. They did have to give up money, but they did it to pay restitution for the damage they did. This is bizarro world. Now, in reality, there are bigger international incidents than this, but it's the Olympics. And fortunately for us, Sean speaks Portuguese, and because of that, we've been able to get a full...
It's all Greek to me, man.
I told you, when I was a kid, my grandparents would argue in Portuguese. I can remember walking into their kitchen one day. I'm like sitting there, like looking around. I don't know. I'm like 8, 9 years old. I'm like, okay, I don't know.
See, the one thing we take out of this: you don't lie to mom.
Well, there's a lot of things you take out of this. Number one, being out at 6 a.m. Okay? Nothing good happens, okay, on the weekend being out at 6 a.m. There's certain hours of the day where not a lot of good happens, okay?
Who amongst us hasn't lied to mom using the "I was held at gunpoint" line? No, none of us have.
Well, I know I haven't, and she would have yelled at me in Portuguese. No. I wouldn't understand a darn word she said. That's why I'm listening to the guys Portuguese. I'm thinking, well, I recognize some of those words. They just weren't said so calmly. Oh, my goodness. I'll give you two great Portuguese delicacies that I personally love. One is called linguiça. Linguiça is a sausage. My mother used to make linguiça stew. She would bake rolls and bake the linguiça into the roll. Oh. When I was at Cape Cod last week, because I was in New England, because this is big in Maine, Fall River, New Bedford, Cape Cod, maybe a little bit into Rhode Island. Okay. I ordered pizza from this place, Pizza by Evan. Yarmouth Pizza by Evan. Linguiça pizza. Great Portuguese sausage. The other one is massafada. Massafada is a Portuguese sweetbread. Nice loaf of it. My mother would make it Thanksgiving, Christmas Day. Toast it up a little bit. It's good. See, the Portuguese thing throws everybody off about me. Throws everybody off. What? I remember working with Gil Santos. Now, Gil Santos is 100% Portuguese. And I said to him, I said, Gil, and we worked together for 4 years on the Football Network. I said, I'm half Portuguese. He goes, get out of here. He says, no, I'm serious. So Penn State was playing Boston College. And my parents, this is like, I don't know, 1984, I think it was, showed up at the hotel to come over and say hi to me. And my mother walks in. He looks at my mother and goes, oh, my God, you are Portuguese. I say, yes, I am. I've been trying to tell you. And it turned out that his grandparents were from São Miguel in the Azores, and my grandparents were from São Miguel in the Azores. Small world. That's my Portuguese story for the day. all of you are not fascinated. We will come back with more in a moment as the Ryan Lochte saga continues. You mean the Lochte thing is not our play-by-play call of the day?
Negatory.
Negatory.
How do you say that in Portuguese?
Negatory. Don't look at me. There's certain like little expressions I remember that my grandparents would say to me, but that's about it when I was a kid. But they would say a couple of things to me because they spoke with no accent, fluent, complete, English. I mean no accents at all. They both came over here when they were kids. But remember, when they came over here, this was a time of neighborhoods, and they both grew up in a Portuguese neighborhood. My mother spoke until my mother was 4 years old, because she grew up in Cambridge. She spoke Portuguese exclusively until she was 4 years old, because you go to the market in the neighborhood, it was all in Portuguese. You go to Mass on Sunday, the Mass is in Portuguese. It wasn't until they moved from Cambridge out to Lexington, and yes, it's the famous Lexington from Lexington and Concord, where the first battle of Revolutionary War took place. My godmother's home is only four homes off the green. When they moved out there, that's where my mother absolutely had to learn English. And like I said, my grandparents, they had no accent whatsoever. But they could lapse into speaking it when they didn't want people to know what they were saying. We'll come back with more in a moment here on the News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle's worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
What do we have coming up on the show today besides incredible Ryan Lochte coverage? We're going to have on the next half hour Dale Haringel, Penn State grad from Bridgestone Motorsports, chief engineer and manager of race tire development. Neil Coulong is going to come on. We're going to talk about James Harrison. Just another segment the suit doesn't want to listen to. Just kidding. Anything on your docket today?
Well, we're working on tomorrow. Looks like Dave Spadaro. He'll be with us tomorrow afternoon. We'll get an Eagles-Steelers recap from him.
And we've got Donnie Collins in the final half hour today. So we've got guests each of the next 3 half hours. We're going to talk racing, Steelers football, and Penn State football. And we'll slip in some Ryan Lochte stuff as well. I don't think he told the truth.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Dale Haringel from Bridgestone in a few moments. We're going to talk about race tires and the race coming up at Pocono this week. This day in sports history first, 1915, Braves Field was inaugurated with the Boston Braves beating the St. Louis Cardinals 3-1. I just talked about my grandparents, and my grandfather, before the Braves moved to Milwaukee, was actually a huge Boston Braves fan. He spent many a day at Braves Field, which is now currently Nickerson Field, which is currently the soccer field for the Boston University soccer team. You can see it from the Mass Pike when you drive. Reds and Braves in 1956, when they were in Milwaukee, combined for 10 home runs. Reds won it 13-4. Lou Burdett threw a no-hitter against the Phillies. Score 1-0. Burdett was a great pitcher in the late 50s, early 60s. Hank Aaron, 1,378th extra base hit this date in 1973. George Brett got that batting average over 400 this late in the season. Ended up hitting 390 that year. What a year he had. A year, of course, that the Phillies won the World Series. Herschel Walker took out an insurance policy with Lloyd's of London in 1981. He was insured for $1 million. Earl Campbell, 1987, announced his retirement. Jack Ham talks more about trying to tackle Earl Campbell than any other back he's talked to me about. And in 1992, Larry Bird, after 13 seasons with the Celtics, announced his retirement. Magic Johnson and Larry Bird saved the NBA. Brought team basketball excitement, run, gun, fun back to the league, and it set the tone for everything we see today. Pocono, 500 miles coming up on Sunday. What about the tires? Well, this guy is an expert on it, and that's Dale Haringle. Dale, Penn State grad out of Catasauqua with Bridgestone Motorsports. Welcome. It is great to have you on the show.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
All right. Let's talk about the technology of this. Now, Indy cars are different, and the speed of them completely different than NASCAR. In fact, when I've done the show at Pocono, that's the first thing people say to me. We can't believe how fast these guys go. Because they're about 40 miles per hour faster than a NASCAR going around that track. How different does the tire have to be on a trioval with three distinctly different turns compared to an oval like Indy?
You know, it sounds like you're pretty familiar with the IndyCar series, and you're absolutely right. The tires for Pocono are pretty unique. It's one of the most challenging tracks on the circuit for us in that those three unique turns really make it difficult for the teams to set the car up perfectly. There's always a compromise between do they want to get through the high bank turn one or the flat turn three. And the way the teams make those compromises actually leads to some tremendous racing because it's unlikely that the car will be good in all three corners. From a tire standpoint, Pocono is a tricky place for us to develop tires for. We actually use the right side tires that we use at Texas because of the high banks in turn number one. And then the left side tire is the same tire that we use at Indy. And that combination works out well for us, works out well for the teams.
And it takes a lot to develop this. I mean, over time, what are some of the adjustments that you as a tire manufacturer and through research have made so they can make some of the decisions you're talking about?
You know, we work very closely with the IndyCar series. We work very closely with the teams to get their feedback. And we've been doing this quite a while. We got back into IndyCar racing in 1995. So we're to the point where we're making small iterations. We're making small changes year over year, trying to better adapt the tires to the cars, to the speeds. You know, we had the aero kits come out brand new for 2015, and that was quite a change. We saw quite a jump in speed all across the series. So we had to make some changes to our constructions, to our compounds to accommodate. But realistically, we're looking at small changes year over year to best adapt the tires to the cars.
What about the heat factor? Because it's been awfully hot here, and I think Sunday's going to be okay, I think, for the most part. But I remember Indy May was very hot there. So what kind of change does that put into the mind of engineers and so forth as to what the track temperature is going to be, as to what kind of tire to run?
You know, the hotter track temperatures do demand a bit of a stiffer tire, a bit of a tire with a little bit less grip. Also, when we have the high ambience and high track temperatures in IndyCar, because the car is so aero-dependent, we actually see the performance of the car fall off a little bit in the heat because you just can't generate as much downforce as you can on a cooler day. So we take all that into account, and you know, I think the forecast right now for Pocono looks like about 80 degrees on Sunday. So I think we've got the right tire for the conditions, and we should be fine.
All right, you are a native of Catasauqua. You're a Penn State graduate. So there's probably many times in your life you had to go over to the inspection station. And, of course, one of the things they do is they'll inspect the tread to see how much tread's on the tire. But if they were to see a car tire that we use every day as opposed to a race tire when it comes to tread, I think people would be shocked. Why is it that the, quote, bald appearance works so well in a race car?
Well, there's two reasons for that. One, the tire without the tread pattern puts the maximum amount of rubber on the surface. And, of course, on the ovals, we only run in the dry. So getting that maximum amount of rubber in contact with the track gives us the most grip possible. So we don't want any void on our race tires for the dry conditions. The other reason is heat. Our treads are very thin, basically the thickness of about two credit cards when it's brand new. And the reason we do that is to help reject the heat. You know, we'll be running 224 miles an hour at Pocono, and the tires can get quite warm. So in order to get rid of some of the heat that the rubber generates, we keep everything as thin and light as possible and still make sure it can do the job for the Verizon IndyCar Series.
Are there specific left side tires versus specific right side tires, or are they the same?
Absolutely, there's specific tires. You know, the Verizon IndyCar Series is one of the most unique series in motorsports in that we run on street courses, we run on road courses, we run on super speedways like Pocono. And for the 16-race season, we'll make 59 different specifications of tires.
Wow.
Every time the car is on the track, every tire on the car is unique. So even though the right front and left front look the same at Pocono, they're different constructions, they're different compounds, they're optimized to handle their position on the car.
Does a driver's style come into play in terms of what they want specifically on a car?
You know, not so much on the ovals. Where we see
there's
style
a pretty standard, there's a pretty standard line in an oval, right? I mean, that's probably the reason why.
Yeah. You know, a guy like Ed Carpenter that grew up driving on a small track, he might like a little more stagger. Stagger is the difference in the size of the rear tires. It helps the car turn on the ovals, as opposed to someone that grew up maybe driving go-karts or driving smaller formula cars. We see a lot more difference in driver style on the road and street courses where, you know, drivers come from all different areas, and sometimes how they developed into an IndyCar driver really influences their driving style and how they attack a circuit.
Where's the benefit that we get as consumers from the technology and all the advances you've made in race cars?
You know, I think the benefit comes in two key areas. One is the fundamental materials that go into the tire, the polymers, the reinforcements, those fundamental materials. You know, we talked about the heat at Pocono or the heat at Indy this year. You know, the materials that help us accommodate that heat and help us deal with that are the same materials that can help a tractor trailer going through the Arizona desert on a 110-degree day. So that's where some of the technology is transferred on those fundamental materials. The other place the transfer really helps us is in people development. Racing's a very dynamic environment. It's high, it's fast-paced, it's high pressure. Really helps us develop engineers to take on challenges later in their careers.
All right. For you, we've talked about some of the great parts of this. What are some of the challenging parts of this job for you on a week-by-week basis?
You know, one of the biggest challenges, I think, is just the amount of travel, the amount of time spent away from home, the amount of time spent away from family. With Indianapolis and the way this past year and the way the weekends worked out, I had at one point I had worked 35 days in a row. But that's we take on that challenge to support the Verizon IndyCar Series and to give the fans a great show, and happy to do it. But that's probably the single biggest challenge to what we do.
How much off-season testing do you do, and normally where do you do it?
You know, we run anywhere from 3 or 4 off-season tests, and we try whenever possible to run on the racetracks that the Verizon IndyCar Series competes on. So, for example, this year we just did a test in Indianapolis like 2 weeks ago to get ready for 2017. We'll go to Phoenix here in October. We'll probably maybe do something down in Sebring, Florida. Sebring's a good street course substitute. So three or four tests over the winter.
All right. What's the trickiest test for tires on a street course, an oval? Pocono's unto itself, so I mean, I think Pocono's kind of because of the tri-oval. So oval versus street course. What are the two? Which one on each would be the trickiest for you sometimes to get set up for?
I think in a lot of ways the ovals are more difficult to get set up for. Each oval is fairly unique. They all have a different combination of banking and loading on the tires and expected speeds. So we really work hard to make sure the tires are exactly right for the ovals. Plus, you know, the drivers are going, like I said, at Pocono, we'll be doing 224 miles an hour.
Oh, yeah.
So we really want to make sure the drivers have confidence in those tires when they go into turn one at Pocono at that kind of speed.
I know it's NASCAR, but I remember talking with Jeff Gordon last year when he came here to Penn State, and I asked him about the three turns, and he talked about a completely different approach into each turn. I sat back and went, wow. I mean, that's a lot of thinking they have to do in a short period of time. Amazing. Dale, it was a real pleasure having you on the show today. Great insight as to something that's going to be fun and exciting for people to watch, the ABC Supply 500 coming up on Sunday, which, by the way, the contract for that has now been renewed as well for Pocono in the coming years. So, Dale, thanks so much, and great to have you on board.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
All right. That segment was brought to you by The Suit.
Now, is The Suit happy that we did that?
If he's not, that's his problem.
Well, if we had some time to discuss his problems, I mean, we could probably do an 8-part series. All right. Neil Coulong, next half hour. The Lochte story, the press conference on him today and the other swimmers is really, I mean, they really went after him. But there are a couple parts in there that actually I also find out to be a little interesting, and it's not a complete fabrication. We'll talk about it in a moment as we continue here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. Gets more fascinating by the minute, the Lochte story, because obviously it is the police department down there is going, and it may be referred to military police. Again, each country has their own rules, jurisdictions, whatever. But this story now takes on a different feel after the press conference, because, I mean, they went after him pretty good. All right, so let's get to that part. But there are also a couple of parts here where, number one, of course, the swimmers are not completely sober, I guess, at the time. But evidently, okay, the part where the story came out that no guns were drawn, security guard showed up, no guns were drawn. And I said yesterday, I don't believe that. Well, guess what? I was right not to believe it. They did draw their guns. Two of them drew their guns. And money exchanges hands. Now, is it restitution? Or was it extortion? That's the... And the security guard does not... The security guard, by the way, is an off-duty police officer down there. Why? Okay, where's it is a legitimate question to ask. So, okay, they give the owner the money. So they hand him the money. But did they then hand money to the security guards? the owner evidently doesn't want to press charges in this whole thing. So, I mean, this is crazy. So there's part of this where it's an absolute fabrication, but there's also part of this that actually is not. This is a strange, strange story. But they did have guns drawn on them. And I have no idea what Brazilian law is. I barely know what the laws happen to be in Turbotville. I mean, it's how would I know? But this is, it's like being in Bizarro World. But they went after him pretty good, but they say they weren't robbed. They do say they paid restitution. But they also said no guns were drawn. Oh, wait a minute, there were guns drawn. And the question is, was money given to the security guard? That's a big one.
You'll kind of get a chuckle out of this. It was just mentioned in the press conference a few seconds ago, tweeted out by NBC News. The Brazil police chief says the U.S. swimmer should apologize for tarnishing the reputation of Rio. Sounds like the Brazil police chief shares the same office with the head of the Chamber of Commerce.
But if that's all they have to do, if I'm in their position, that's all I have to do to get out, I will profusely apologize as long as they let me get to the airport and get the heck out of there.
I would probably think a lot of the reporters that are down there now are thinking the exact same thing. It's like, Sunday just can't get here anytime soon. This is just a complete mess.
And to think, we could have sent the suit. This story is, okay, it's become more enlightening, but also slightly more mysterious as time goes. Okay? They're not robbed, but if there's a payoff made to the security guard who's an off-duty police officer, then they technically are robbed. Correct? Now, they did give money, and they're shown giving money to the manager of the gas station. Now, that's only right. That's restitution. Look, we'll settle this right here. What'll it take here to settle? We talk back and forth. Take care. Okay. That's legit. But if money's given to the security guard, and I'm not saying it was, I'm saying, but that part's murky right now. Then that becomes a different proposition, doesn't it? Wow. But two of the security guards did draw their guns on them. Now, I don't know how they're acting at the time. I don't know if they're acting like people that should have had guns drawn on them.
The police at the press conference just said a little while ago that Lochte was the most quote-unquote rowdy of the group of swimmers. So I guess they needed to draw something to try to add some calm to the situation and try to put it to an end.
Right. No, I understand that. I'm saying, you know, at that hour, intoxicated, what are the odds? Of course. And Lochte stands out because of his hair.
That's another story in itself.
No, but I'm saying, but he stands out because of it.